The reading is taken from Exodus 14, verses 1 to 14, and it can be found in the Pew Bible on page 71. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Tell the Israelites to turn back and camp near Pi-hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea. They are to camp by the sea, directly opposite Baal-zephon. Pharaoh will think, 'The Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion, hemmed in by the desert, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them. But I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army, and the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord.' So the Israelites did this. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds about them and said, 'What have we done? We have let the Israelites go and have lost their services.' So he had his chariot made ready and took his army with him. He took 600 of the best chariots, along with all the other chariots of Egypt, with officers over all of them. The Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites, who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi-hahiroth, opposite Baal-zephon. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, 'Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to die in the desert?'" Or brought us to the desert, I apologize. "What you have done to us by bringing us out of Egypt. Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians. It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert.'" Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still."
So we've been working through the book of Exodus, and we've come to this point of the Exodus itself. We've had this great journey from the people in slavery. Remember how only 70 people went into Egypt in the time of Joseph during the famine, just 70. They went in a bit of a rabble. They come out a nation of more than 2 million people. During those years, 430 years, they become slaves because the Egyptians feel threatened, and so they enslave them, they put them down, they work them hard. The people cry out to God, "God, help us, we want to be free, get us out of this place. It's bad here." God hears their cry, he sends Moses. So Moses comes along and says to Pharaoh, "Let my people go." And we know the story that each time Pharaoh says no. So God sends a sign, or a plague. And with each passing plague, which gets more severe as they go on, still Pharaoh hardens his heart until it gets to the point where God hardens Pharaoh's heart for him. But he would not let the people go until the final plague that we looked at last week, the plague of the firstborn. And we know that the Israelites were told to take a lamb, kill the lamb, put the blood on the doorposts, and stay inside the house all night. Simple instructions. Kill the lamb, put the blood on the doorposts, stay inside. And if you did that, you were protected. But the firstborn of every animal and every family that did not have the protection of the blood of the lamb died. So Pharaoh calls Moses and Aaron during the night and says, "Just go. Just get out of here. Take all your people. Take all your animals. That's what you wanted to do. Just go and pray for me." So the people are on standby and they went. And what happens is just an amazing thing. More than 2 million people, 2.5 million people, maybe more, moving out of Egypt where they've been for centuries. This was God at work. God at work through all these stages. This was an awesome thing that the Jews would keep year after year after year to remember. And God had put down some important things to remember, because it's important to remember. It's important for our children to remember. Exodus 12, verse 17, celebrate the feast of unleavened bread, because it was on this very day that I brought you out of Egypt. So celebrate it. And celebrate this day as a lasting ordinance for the generations to come. God didn't want anyone to forget what he had done. Verse 26, and when your children ask you, what's this all about? What does this ceremony mean? A bit like what we do this morning. Maybe your children, when you get home, will say, what was that all about? That grape, that bread, and that wine. And it's an opportunity to tell them what it was. And that's what the people are told to do. Then again in Exodus 13, in the days to come, when your son asks you, what does this mean, this ceremony? Say to him, with a mighty hand, the Lord brought us out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. The first generation could tell their people, I was there. I saw it. I saw the wonderful things that God did. I was there when we killed the lamb and we put the blood on the doorposts and the angel of death didn't touch it, just passed over us. I was there. Tell your children. And then the next generation would tell the next generation, because it was important that they would not forget what the Lord had done. This was something to be handed on from generation to generation. And it's the same with us today. Key times like Easter is a perfect time to tell our children, our grandchildren, about our faith. What is church about? What is faith about? Why did Jesus die? Did he really rise again? These are perfect times to give our testimony, to tell our story, to tell the good news, the gospel story. But there's one thing that we're really good at. Forgetting. We forget so easily, don't we? It happens over and over and over again. And these people would do that too. But in the meantime, they move out. They move out of the country. They go by faith. Hebrews 11 tells us Moses led the people by faith. By faith, they put the blood on the doorposts. Now by faith, they were going. And they would enter into a wilderness experience. They didn't know it, but they were going to be in that desert for 40 years. It didn't have to be that way. They could have left Egypt and been to the promised land in 2 weeks. If things had gone smoothly. But things didn't go smoothly. And they had this wilderness experience. It's going to be a time of preparation, a time of getting to know themselves, a time of getting to know God, a time of learning to trust him. Whenever we go through wilderness experiences, they're not easy, but they're usually beneficial. Of course, when we go through the tough times, it tests our faith. Is my faith real? Is there really a God? Because if there is, I'm going to cry out to him. For I've nowhere else to go. Lord, help me. And if you read the Psalms, they're littered with that. Lord, where are you? Help me. Life is hard. But I have no one to turn to but you. It's the same with us in our wilderness experience. Who do we turn to when we have nowhere else to go? Is our faith real? And God is going to test the faith of these people. But not testing them to try to break them, but try to prove to themselves that they have a faith in this God. And they do trust in this God who worked miracles and brought them out of Egypt. The important thing was not to forget. Sometimes we can stay in the wilderness experience. Unnecessarily. Those times that are hard can be good. But sometimes we stay in those places for too long. When we don't need to. We simply wallow. We simply feel sorry for ourselves. We're scared to move forward, always looking back, like these people would do. Sometimes we can remain there too long. But the people, as I said, could have been in that promised land so much quicker. After about a year, they were already prepared to go. In fact, they went into the promised land. You remember that story? The spies went into the land to check it out. And they came back, most of them saying, they're giants, they're too big for us. This is too scary, we can't do it. They could have done it. They were ready for it. God wanted them to go, but they said, we can't do it. Joshua and Caleb were of a different type. They said, we can do it. God is with us. God has asked us to go. Nothing is impossible for God. But all the others could see was giants. As we live out our faith, as we put ourselves in his hands, he will never ask us to do anything that we can't handle. Chapter 14, it talks about the Lord deliberately moving the people towards the Red Sea. We know this story, don't we? He deliberately moves the people towards the Red Sea. It was his plan. And as I've been saying from week to week, God always has a plan, and he always tells the people the plan. He told Moses what he's going to do. I'm going to take you towards the Red Sea. He's going to box them in, really. And then he's going to bring Pharaoh chasing after them. But God has a plan. Don't worry. I will fight for you. You'll be safe. But these people will be wiped out. But meanwhile, Pharaoh looks at himself. They've gone and he says, what have we done? Why have we let these people go? This was their workforce. Why have we let this happen? So they thought, we'll go after them. Verse 7. He took 600 of his best chariots along with all the other chariots of Egypt. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching out boldly. The Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, all his horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them as they camped by the sea. So Pharaoh takes all his army, all his strongest men, all his best chariots, everything that he had, and he starts to pursue the Israelites. They're by the Red Sea. They're hemmed in by the sea behind them and ranges of mountains outside of them. And ahead, they could see the Egyptians coming. A cloud of dust, all the chariots coming towards them. And what did they feel? Scared stiff. And they cried out to the Lord. And they cried out to Moses. And they said, why did you bring us here? Were there not enough graves in Egypt? You had to bring us out here to kill us? For us to die out here? They were frightened. Now I want you to imagine if you were one of those people among the 2.5 million. You were standing there. You had left Egypt. There's a mountain range to your right, a mountain range to your left, and there's the Red Sea behind you. And in front of you, there is a huge, vast, the strongest army that the world had ever known coming towards you. How would you feel? Would you say, God is faithful. He's looked after me to this point. He brought me out of Egypt. He didn't bring me all this way just to kill me. I don't need to worry. Or would you feel like the Egyptians? Or in our own lives, when we're boxed into a corner, when something happens, how do we respond to it? When times are hard, do we say, God is faithful? I have seen him working through my life day after day, year after year. Or do we get frightened? That is why it so often says in the Bible, do not fear. What challenges do you have in your life at the moment? And how are you dealing with them? Do we recognize that God is faithful? Or like the Israelites, do we panic and complain and regret that we ever started this journey at all? The Israelites have seen God do amazing miracles. And yet, when the latest trial came, they were chicken. They were scared. They had seen him do amazing things, and yet they were frightened. And they would be frightened over and over and over again. But not for people like Joshua and Caleb. They weren't frightened. Because you see, they had a big picture of God. They had a big God. And when you have a big God, all your problems seem small. But when you have a small image of God, if your God is very small and very part-time, then your problems are huge. What size is your God? What size is your image of God? What is your perspective? Is he a big God that can handle anything? Or is he a distant, remote, vague kind of a God? And you're on your own. This was a test for the people. That is why in chapters 12 and 13, God is insistent. You have to remember. You have to remember what I've done. You've got to remember what I've done in the past. Commemorate it. Celebrate it. Tell your children about it. Remember, remember, remember. And they had seen all that had happened in Egypt. And then they instantly forget. Seems crazy, doesn't it? And yet you and I would have done exactly the same. As we celebrate Easter, we must not forget what God has done. Gave his son, his one and only son, to die on a cross. We mustn't forget it. Not as some kind of empty ritual, but as a reality. Jesus came. He was a historical person. He was God. He gave his life freely. He died on a cross to take away our sin. We mustn't forget it. And on the third day, he rose again from the dead. And he eventually ascended into heaven and sits at God's right hand. We mustn't forget it. Jesus is king. Jesus is a ruler. Jesus is in control of everything in your life and in the world. There is nothing beyond his control. We mustn't forget it. And as we take communion, that's what we're doing. We're remembering how much God loved us and what he's done for us. We mustn't forget, because it's true. And it's for you. Moses said to the people, don't be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring to you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. How did he know that? God had told him. The Lord will fight for you. You only need to be still. There is nothing that God cannot do. There is nothing that God cannot do through you. Nothing. Do you believe that? Is it real? Remember what he's done. Look at this amazing creation we're part of. Think about the times God has been really close, how he's spoken to you through the Bible or through friends, what he's done in your life, how he's led you. Never doubt him. Never forget what he has done. So God says to Moses, who had obviously come to God saying, what am I going to do? And he says, why are you coming crying to me? What is in your hand? The staff, what is in your hand? Stretch out your hand and part the sea and let the people walk through on dry land. Who could have seen that coming? The Egyptians are in front of them. They're hemmed in. And you're going to make a way through the sea. Who could ever dream that up? Who could ever have imagined it? Not Moses, not the people. But God had a plan. Moses, what have you got in your hand? Use it. And he opened up that ground so the people could cross on dry land. He makes a way where there seems to be a way. God does what only he can do. The impossible. Many years later, Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 43, was to take this story to encourage the people of his day that God is strong and powerful to remember. And he said to them, this is what the Lord says. The Lord who made a way through the sea, a path through the mighty waters. He wanted his people in Isaiah's day to remember that God today was the same as back then. If he helped the people of Israel back then, he can help you today. Do not forget it. And yet he didn't want them to dwell in the past, because God is a God of today. And so he goes on to see, forget the former things. Don't dwell in the past. Look, I'm doing something brand new. Now it springs up. Do you not see it? I am making a way in the desert and streams in the wasteland. As Isaiah stood there, if he looked back 700 years, he would have found Moses standing beside the Red Sea, watching God make a way where there seemed to be no way to rescue his people. And if he looked forward 700 years, he would see God doing exactly the same thing, making a way where there seemed to be no way, except it was on a cross on Calvary. God is still in the business of rescuing his people. He has made a way into God's presence, a way into heaven, a way to be forgiven, a way that we could not have guessed. If God's going to deal with our sin, can you think how he would do it? You would never have thought of a cross. You would never have thought of God dying on a cross. And yet God did. And he did it for you and for me. And that is what we come to celebrate today. We serve a God who is extraordinary and who wants us to love him and to live for him and to know the power of his life in our lives. This isn't just a nice thing we do. This is remembering that God is God. He can do the impossible. He wants you to trust Him, to love Him, and to follow Him.